Weather and Traffic Station, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Depend on it.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Wow, good morning. Even my earphones are cold this morning. I just leave them in the car, the kids spill stuff on them, and then I bring them in on a Sunday morning, and it's 24 degrees on Peachtree, so it is chilly. I don't know if you're in your car. If you are, you've just gotten past that phase where you're driving and you shouldn't be driving because there is frost on the windshield, but you know it should go away pretty soon, so you're going through your neighborhood, you can't really see, so you're driving really slow, and then all of a sudden, everything melts and you can see again. I know that feeling. I think that happened to me this morning. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. We finally had an okay week in stocks. Again, not a comfortable week at all. We were down over 500 points in the middle of the week on Wednesday, and this relentless selling. Really, the term I heard, I can't believe I haven't heard this before in all these years, but the word stampede really describes what we've been going through. If you go back to the very end of last year, the end of 2015, into 2016, there was just this relentless selling pressure day after day after day. A few days where we were flat and we tried to rally and then we just didn't, and then boom. The selling pressure continued, just like a stampede of wild bulls. Actually, probably more like bears. And that's what we've been going through. And it's all tied at the hip, like we've talked about for the last couple of weeks, to oil that, again, seems to have no reasonable bottom or no reasonable end to this waterfall decline that has continued to happen day after day all through 2016, which has made this year start out on a very sour note. And I know that there's plenty of nerves out there. People are uncomfortable. We did finally get a mini U-turn this week, and effectively things stopped going down, at least for now. So we need to talk through that. Good morning. If you're just tuning in, welcome to Money Matters on a chilly Sunday, 24 degrees on Peachtree. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. The questions today, what do I mean when I say quality? When we've talked about, and it seems to come up when things get bad in markets and corrections start to scare people. And the headline news is how much the Dow went down today, yesterday. What I seem to default back to, really personally, and that's why I bring it here to the show, is that I go back to, hey, what do I really own in my head? What do I own? I go through that inventory and I say, well, that's not going anywhere, and that stock I own is not going anywhere, and that company's not going out of business, and those bonds that I own, they're fine. They're not going to default. So I go through that registry in my mind as we go through turbulent times, and I think to myself, well, I own quality. I own companies that are not going anywhere. I mean, I don't own, and I want to, we'll go through, let's just do it now. Think about some of the companies that have gone places. So if you own quality, and again, this is what gives me just some resolve and it gives me calm. And I know that, wow, I know we're going to go through these really difficult periods of time and the market may be down 10% or 15%. And by the way, as a reminder, every single time the market is down 10, 15, 20%, remember, it has to always be something new. So it's never the exact same song. It's always something a little bit different. Or else we wouldn't be going down by 10 or 15% because we would have already heard that song. We'd have said, well, here's how we get out of it. It's got to be slightly different in order to present a new fear. You're going through this, you might be going through the same fun house on Halloween, but there's a new fear around the corner every time, or else it's not scary. And that's what happens every time we correct. So I think to myself, okay, well, what are the companies that, what happens if we go badly? By the way, good morning, welcome to Money Matters. We're live here this morning. The number in the studio, call us here and we'll go through your questions and how all this relates to you. And maybe you're in a position where you're ready to make a decision financially or buy a product or sell a product or just change course or figure out how to adjust the course that you're on, or maybe it's just logistically more, hey, I've got a pension offer and my company's trying to buy out this cash flow that they've given me and they want to give me a lump sum, and man, the money looks pretty good, but hey, there goes my income stream. That's something that I know that many of us are faced with. Social Security questions, all of the things that are swimming around in, and then on top of all that, you've got this volatile market. And it gets us into a position where you start saying to yourself, I wonder what Wes would say about that. Let's call Money Matters on Sunday morning. Mornings. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. Ryan Ealy here with me this morning, ready to take your calls and pass them through. Phone lines open this morning, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. So let's go back to quality. What do I mean by quality? Let's go through a couple of scenarios where quality is in question. You've heard of bankruptcies. You've heard of all the companies I'm about to mention. You've heard of Lehman. You've heard of, which was a $700 billion bankruptcy. You've heard of CIT Group during the financial crisis, 80-some billion-dollar company that had $65 billion in debt. General Motors, out of business during the financial crisis. WorldCom, remember Bernie Ebbers, $104 billion down the tube. Washington Mutual during the financial crisis, very leveraged to mortgages. Of course, Lehman. And then there's then there's some other brands that were call these darlings as well of Wall Street that just either went away or almost completely went away. Think of, again, we're talking about quality. I want to give you some examples of the opposite of quality. Companies that you can't say, I wonder if that company is going to go away. Can it just go away? That's the fear as an investor, because if the company goes away, my stock goes to zero, my bonds go to zero, or maybe 20 cents on the dollar. So there are companies that can go away really quickly. BlackBerry is an example. 2007, BlackBerry was, again, remember BlackBerries? That's what everyone used to own before iPhones came around. Remember BlackBerries? Scott Maxim had two BlackBerries and he's refurbing one right now. He's part of the 1% of America that still has a BlackBerry. There was a time when 25% of the planet was controlled, smartphone market, by BlackBerry. 2007, BlackBerry was $125 a share, $70 billion market cap, just in 07. It was Canada's most valuable company. And then in 2007, Apple launched something called, and you probably have one of these at home, called an iPhone. By 2012, things were still going okay. And, well, no, 07 was really the height. 08, kind of the pinnacle, and then down from there. As the iPhone launched, RIM began to create this long, scary, and really not even that long, this descent that was ridiculous. By 2012, RIM went all the way, it was down to 5% of worldwide smartphone market. So they went from 25% down to 5% in 2012. So 5 years after their peak, they had dropped 75-80% in market share. And in the United States, all the way down to 1.1%. BlackBerry today is now a $3.5 billion company, down from almost over $70 billion. $70 billion down to about $3.5. That is complete equity destruction. Blockbuster, same thing. 1994, IPO'd, or had a value of about $8.5 billion, then it went public in an IPO in 1999. By 2004, there were 9,000 Blockbuster stores. And by the way, remember, same kind of scenario, Netflix goes public in 2002. And what's interesting is that BlackBerry had the opportunity to buy Netflix for $50 million. They passed on it. Well, by 2010, those 9,000 stores basically gone. BlackBuster files for bankruptcy, 2010. So these are examples of companies that were either very focused on one small myopic thing that they did, and they were completely destroyed by technology. They were a one product show, and they were destroyed by some new technology. And then in the case of Lehman, Washington Mutual, WorldCom, CIT Group, GM, the common theme throughout all of these companies, they had heavy, heavy debt loads, and they were leveraged. So they were borrowing 20, 30, 40 times their asset value. So they were heavily leveraged, ready to topple over. And that's exactly what happened to all of them. These are not examples of quality. These are examples of companies that are living on the edge and were hot for a moment, and then they completely flamed out. And they're just not existent anymore. BlackBerry's still in business, but it's a shell of itself. And who knows if they will actually stay afloat over the next couple of years. I want you as an investor to not have any worries about that. You should have complete conviction and peace of mind and common resolve that, hey, I've got companies and I have enough of them. This is not a scenario where when I bring up Procter & Gamble and Johnson & Johnson and Exxon and Microsoft, which, by the way, J&J, Exxon, and Microsoft are the few, really only three AAA-rated companies on the planet. Still lots of other highly rated AA, high-quality companies, low debt, diversified business models, really strong balance sheets. They have the ability to service any debt that they might have. And then they have diversified and stable revenue streams. So they have customers all over the place, and they're not a one trick pony. That's why I always bring up the example of zooming in on a company like Procter & Gamble. 80 different brands, $84 billion in revenue, around for 180 years. Tentacles all over the world, multiple products, and in almost every country around the world. How does that company just go away? Well, it doesn't. It doesn't in any scenario you draw out. That company's still here in 10 years. It's probably here in 50 years from now. So it's that kind of company, whether you own it as a stock and it pays dividends, or you own a similar company and you own their bonds or their debt that also pays you interest, having a collection of those higher quality companies that are here for your lifetime over the next couple of decades, and you have the resolve and the peace of mind that you know that they're going to be there, especially if you have 20 or 30 of them with diversification, then you know as we go through these market storms, you're going to be okay. And you don't have to worry about the market up and down 10% or down 15% like we were Wednesday, by the way, of this week. And that's the kind of strategy that'll give you peace of mind to get through the inevitable air pockets that we go through, just like we're going through one right now. So I know we've got calls here. We will get to 404-872-0750. You are listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here Sunday mornings. Stay tuned, news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here, News 95.5, AM 750 WSB.
Back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Right to the phones here in the studio. Pete joins us from Helen. Pete,
hello.
Good morning. How can we help, my friend?
Well, I said one of the stocks that I have is Kroger.
Yes.
They've got about 44 to 45 weeks in a row of 45 quarters of profit. And why don't they just take off like the other stocks?
So why isn't Kroger going up, I guess, is the question.
They split, but they didn't. I mean, they split their stock. They had a good year last year, but nothing like Sam's or Costco.
Well, I think that one of the great things about Kroger, I'll always remember this, is that during the darkest days of the financial crisis in 2008, it was really difficult in the rubble to find a stock that didn't go down a little bit or a lot. And Kroger was actually up, I want to say, 2% back in the carnage. I always give Kroger this wonderful credit for surviving that or not going down as a stock. But here's the question. Are you still there, Pete?
I am.
So the question here is that why isn't it up, let's say? And it has been a while here. If you go back and look at a chart, it's been effectively, today it's at $37, and you can go back almost a year and a half ago, and it was still at around that same level. So it's basically flatlined for a year. Now, a couple of thoughts, though. I think part of what's happening with Pete here, and I think we all go through this, is that we look at a stock or a company and the numbers are good and it's growing its dividend and it's growing its revenue, but the stock isn't doing anything. And it's been a year, and a year's a long time. You know, we only live for 80, 90 years if we're lucky. So we get this what's called a recency bias, and we say, well, it's not doing anything. Well, I think what's happening here is, Pete, you and I, we're looking at the tree. I need you to step back for a minute and look at the forest. I think that's what you're missing, because you look at Kroger and then you look back over 5 years and Kroger's up 249%. And it's been paying a dividend the entire time. In fact, if you bought Kroger 5 years ago, it was paying 5 cents a share. Today it's paying, and that's per quarter. Now it's paying 10 and a half, almost 11 cents per quarter. So it's more than doubled the dividend. So the stock's up 249%, and the dividend is doubled, meaning that if the stock were to have just been flat, if your yield was 2% when you bought it, your yield at cost today is 4%, because just the dividend itself has doubled. So the problem here is not that Kroger has been a bad stock. It's up 249% in the last 5 years. The problem is that Kroger hasn't been a great stock over the past year. Oh, and by the way, over the last 5 years, if you do a chart, the S&P 500 is up in price by about 50%. Again, this is over the last, this is a long period of time here. S&P 500 is up about 49% over that period of time. Kroger's up 248%. So it has still done really, really well. It's just, and it's done a whole lot better than the market itself. So let's be careful about looking at a stock and saying, hey, why doesn't it go up? Why isn't it doing anything? Well, remember, there's only so much a company can do in the middle of a market that also is weighing on it. And that's exactly what's happening here today. We've got a rough market, which holds even really good stocks down temporarily. We've got to just keep that recency in mind. You're listening to Money Matters right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
When you know. Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on WSB Radio. I'm your host, Wes Moss, every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. Call me here in the studio, 404-872-0750 is the number, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Yes, let's talk this morning. We've got calls on hold. I'm going to go to the calls in just a second. Today, we've been talking about what quality really means. It's why I feel like I can be calm and have some resolve during these market air pockets that we inevitably go through year after year after year. Even with good markets, you're going to get 10, 15, 20% corrections that hurt, especially if you're in retirement. That's why you've got to have this focus on companies that aren't going anywhere. You've got to have the conviction to know, hey, I have stocks that pay dividends that are quality that aren't going anywhere in the next decade or two. We don't want the Blockbusters of the world, the Blackberries of the world, Washington Mutuals, the WorldComs. Those are disasters. That's not what you should be owning ever. Now, yes, there are plenty of periods of time where a company really looks good and solid and stable, and then they still go through a period of time where things start to get dim and dark. And that's why you need diversification. That's why you can't own two or three companies, even though you might own the very highest rated companies on the planet. From a credit standpoint, if you own Johnson & Johnson and ExxonMobil and Microsoft, they're AAA rated companies. They have higher credit ratings than the United States government treasury bond. Still doesn't mean that something can't happen to them to damage that credit rating. As an example today, ExxonMobil, of course, is going through a much more difficult time today with oil at $30 than when oil is at $100, and their margins are gigantic and they're just printing gobs of money. Today, it's a much tighter ship that they have to run. They're still going to survive this with no problem, at least in the next several years. But if oil went to $20 and stayed there for a decade, then you start to have to redo that calculus. That's not where we are though today. So the emphasis today and over the next month here on Money Matters is, what do I mean by quality? What are some of the parameters you have to look at? How do you know you own it? Because if you don't, I want you to get in a position where you do. That way you can get through these market storms that inevitably come time after time after time. I also want to talk about capitulation. You hear a lot about this word. Have we reached capitulation? Has everyone thrown in the towel? It's a very famous slogan, or it's a famous investment term that means that, hey, we reached the bottom. Now we can go up from here. Capitulation is actually a little bit, it's different than you might think. And I want to talk about that. But I do want to get to the phones here and answer your calls and questions. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Kim joins us from the famous Toco Hills. I love Toco Hills, Kim.
So do I.
What's going on? How can I help?
Well, first of all, people need to remember that it's kind of like there's a big sale going on at the stock market right now. I just look at down periods as a sale time.
I'm glad you look at it that way.
Yeah.
I think it's a healthy way to look at it. But not. Yeah. But again, not everybody does. So.
No. My question is, I have some very dear friends who the husband passed away. He's only 61 last November. And his wife is 67. She doesn't know a lot about investing. I was talking to her yesterday, and kind of an alarm went off in my head. She was telling me that there was some money invested with one of the big banks. It's got, they use a stagecoach.
I might know what that is. Okay.
Yes. And and I said, well, you know, what's all the stuff you got with them costing you? Oh, nothing.
Free. I heard a cat in the background, by the way.
Yeah.
That's
and,
good.
And I don't think that they're going to be, you know, managing that money, whatever they're doing with it, even if it's an index fund. I doubt that it's being done for nothing or next to nothing, as opposed to, say, like a Vanguard or Fidelity or Schwab that you could get, you know, or lower cost investments with. What do I tell her to look for, or questions to ask to find out what that stuff's costing her?
I hear this a lot, Kim, that my investments are free. They don't cost me anything. And that's, it makes me chuckle a little bit, because there's no such thing, particularly with the really big banks. So big banks, big brokerage firms, there is no such thing as free.
They're getting something out of it.
Of course, of course. And I'm in the investment business, of course, as well, and nothing I do is free.
No.
So, but I very often hear that, hey, I think what I own is free. Now, technically, you could be investing for virtually free. You could be at a, let's say you're at Charles Schwab, and you own a handful of stocks, and you've owned them for a long time. Technically, that is the closest thing to free there is, because once you've bought stocks, and you can buy $100,000 or $10 million worth of stock for basically 10 bucks in today's world, transaction costs are virtually zero, and you hold them, there's no internal cost to a stock. And for most brokerage accounts in today's world, at Fidelity or Schwab or Vanguard, you don't have, there's not a charge just to have an account, like some of the big banks will still charge you 100 or 200 bucks a year just to have an account there.
Right. So, but if she's in mutual funds of some sort, which I think from what she tells me, mutual funds and maybe some bond funds, you know, mm-hmm. there usually are management fees with those.
Not usually. They're always.
Right.
They're always. So here, okay, so a couple, let me peel back the layers for you and anybody else out there that has thought about this question. Not only is it free, I can answer that. The answer is it's not free. Unless you have a few stocks and you do no trading and you have no ETFs and no index funds, that's the only way to actually be quote free. But let's break down a couple of the major costs. Number one, many of us out there, most Americans, if they're investing, own mutual funds, and very simply, mutual funds aren't free. So the quick, easy way to figure out what they are really costing you is just to, you can go to any website to do, a lot of different websites to do this. The best one to go to is Morningstar, and it's free. Morningstar actually is free. You can get a paid subscription for this, but for the purposes we're talking about today, you go to Morningstar.com and you type in the symbol. Uh-huh. So you type in the symbol of the five-letter symbol of the mutual fund, or the three or four-letter symbol of the ETF, and the very top line will give you the key statistic, the yield, the price, and the expense. And that expense, you will find for most mutual funds, is anywhere from 0.5% a year, so 0.50 for a really inexpensive mutual fund, all the way up to 1.5% or 2%. And I've seen mutual funds that are 3% and 4%. Those are outliers, but most mutual funds, you're going to be in the close to 1% range. Here's what's also really interesting about owning mutual funds and understanding what you're really paying. There are any given mutual fund will likely have 3 to 5 different share classes, same fund, but you're paying for it in a different way, depending on the brokerage firm or the bank that sold you the fund. There's A shares, there's B shares, C shares, L shares, R shares, are 3 shares. And each one of those shares have a different cost structure to them. If you own C share mutual funds, you're going to, if you own any C share mutual funds, when you type that into Morningstar, you will likely see fees anywhere from 1.5% to 2.5% because you've got your typical underlying management cost plus 1% that goes to the broker that bought this for you. So if you have any, if you have a mutual fund and ends in letter C, which is typically the share class C at the end of the 5 letters, it's going to be 1.5% to 2.5% a year. That's a very real cost. What's confusing, Kim, and to your friend, is that you don't ever see that cost come out anywhere. It just impacts the performance. So it's a big cost. I mean, 2.5% a year is gigantic. And it's hard to figure it out because you just don't see it. So that's the first place to start, Kim. The
What's a reasonable amount for, because you said 0.05 to 1.5. Is that a reasonable amount that one could expect?
I would look at, the baseline would be Vanguard funds. So yeah. A Vanguard fund is going to be anywhere from, let's call it, you know, some of the more actively managed funds at Wells, or at, not Wells Fargo, but at Vanguard are going to be about 0.25% per year.
Right.
The true index funds that are the lowest cost are going to be 0.05%, not even a tenth. But let's call it anywhere from 0.1 to 0.25 in a given year. And that's to get an index fund without any trading or there's no management going on. It's just an index. And then, so that's your baseline. That's really the cheapest or the least expensive way for people to get really diversified is to own several different index funds or one index fund for that matter. That's the least expense way to invest if you're not going to own individual companies and hold them. And then you go up from there. If you're going to get advice and be with any sort of fee-only firm or an asset management firm, you're going to pay anywhere from 0.5% a year to about 1% a year for the fees to have an advisory firm help you do this. So in the world that we live in today, I'd say 1% is a good benchmark to look at if you're getting ongoing management and advice on your portfolio. Of course, is that as your investment value goes higher, those fees can go down. So once you hit a million, you typically are paying maybe even less than 1%. If you're at 5 million, you're paying well beneath that. And it really just matters where your asset levels are. You know, who gets hit pretty hard, I very often see this. And by the way, Kim from Toco Hills, thank you for your call. Who I see get hit pretty hard are kind of those middle ground investors. So somebody that has, and again, all this is relative. This is all relative, but in the investment, from a big investment world perspective, Wall Street would say, if you've got $250,000, you're a, quote, emerging affluent, or it's somebody that you have some money, but not millions. And really, the big advisory firms, the big global banks and investment firms, they really don't want accounts that are in the $250,000 range. They don't want $200,000 clients, $500,000 clients. They want $1 million clients and up. Now, they're not going to come out and say that, but from what you see them do, they'll move you to a call center if you've only got $250,000. You'll no longer have an advisor. You'll go to a big call center somewhere in Utah, let's say. And they'll have a surcharge on your account so that you've got the fee, then you've got the mutual fund, and then you've got some sort of extra surcharge. And that these are the actions that tell you as a consumer, all of us, that the really big banks, they want, and the big brokerage firms, the investment banks, they want $1 million clients and up. And then the pricing gets, at that point, it gets reasonable at least. So you've got to be really careful. I see who gets overcharged the most are accounts that are kind of middle of the road. It's not pocket change at all. $250,000 is a lot of money. $500,000 is a heck of a lot of money. But it's not in that tier that the big investment banks really want to service. That's who gets really overcharged. So you want to take a look at your account and look at your mutual fund fees, look at the share classes you have, and then look and see in the transaction ledger in any given month or any given quarter, are you paying another 1% or more than 1% on top of all of that? That's where you get this 7-layer dip of fees that can really be a huge lead backpack in the long marathon that we're all running. 404-872-0750. You are listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, certified financial planner, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11, to take your calls and your questions. More Money Matters straight ahead right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss of the Money and Invest.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Back to the phones, 404-872-0750. Thomas joins us from Canton. Thomas, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can I help? Thomas, you're on the air. I can hear that radio in the background, I think, my friend. Can you hear me? Well, maybe not. We'll continue to go to the phones here. Let's go. I think Scott Maxim probably is scolding someone right now to say, hey, you're on the air. And you've got to be careful about that. David joins us in Duluth. David, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can I help?
Good morning. I hope you're doing well.
Yes, I am. You as well.
I had a question about Coca-Cola, you know, the pride of Atlanta, and have some stock in it. There was a lot of controversy over the last year about what Coke was going to do, and some talk about falling sales and that kind of stuff, and I know they have plans in place. What do you think the future is for Coca-Cola?
We were talking about Coca-Cola this week in investment committee, and you look at the stock and it's been really disappointing. So it hasn't even kept up with the S&P 500. Over the last 5 years, you've got, you know, we were talking about Kroger earlier, Kroger up 250% in the last 5 years, S&P up 50, Coke's up 35% over the last couple of years. Now that doesn't, the last 5 years, doesn't count the dividend. So there you have to add a couple percentage points every year for that. But you've got a company in Coca-Cola that I think there's tremendous value there because of the brand, and it's one of those tentacle type companies that that's doing business all over the world, and they're positioned in all of these emerging economies that are still growing. So the problem for these really mature companies like Procter & Gamble and Johnson & Johnson and Coke, they're, to some extent, they're tapped out in the United States, not for profit, but for growth. That's why you've got to like them long-term with China and India in Africa, as far as their ability to generate extra revenue and grow revenue, because that's why a stock will go up. You can't have a stock that just makes money. It's got to grow the business. The problem with Coke, though, is that it is, from any analyst that you talk to, is that it's still a bloated company that overexpanded, and it's the capital cost for the employee base is very expensive. And there's talk that you'll see one of these big private equity type firms. Remember Warren Buffett and 3G Capital? They're out buying food companies, and they're spinning them off, and they're then taking Heinz and Kraft and all these companies that are behemoths that get taken private to get scaled down to go back and go public. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Coke do that. Now, if that happens, it's just complete speculation. If it gets bought out by a big private equity firm, then there's probably some upside from here. But the only reason that that would happen is that it's an easier way for a behemoth company to actually scale back, get a leaner workforce, and then again, take a step back to go forward. So it's a tricky scenario here. It's still a good high quality company with a great brand, and it's in the right places to grow. They just have some real barriers for growth that at some point in the activist world that we live in, meaning a world where if Carl Icahn and a few other multi-billionaires don't like what's happening, eventually somebody goes in and they make the hard decisions for a company like Coke that obviously needs to scale themselves, rescale, if you will, which is a nice word for saying probably eliminate a bunch of jobs, unfortunately. At some point, that will happen. It's hard on the timing, of course. You're listening to Money Matters. Lots of calls on hold. We'll continue to go through these. Lots of individual company questions coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. You're listening to Money Matters right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.